Attention, Sunday Days, Sunday News. Who is winning? Even if USA imperialist were to make the maximum, miraculous, and conceivable industrial advances over the next few years, it will clearly have to accept second place to the Soviet Union, the avant-garde of liberation in the world, in reference to economic output in the early 80s. A few years after the revolution, the USSR, industrially speaking, was the best part of a century behind the USA. By 1980, however, Soviet industrial production will be nearly a tenth above the USA's total. At most, the gap will then be 2 or 3 years. Between 1860 and 1913, more than 50 years, Tsarist Russia, imperialist or feudalistic Russia, didn't even begin to close the economic gap. The USA imperialist always produced at least 8 times Russia's maximum. Then came the war, followed by the Civil War, and foreign intervention by 14 nations. In 1922, when the last foreign invaders were driven from Soviet territory, the League of Nations estimated that the United States output was 35 times that of the war-ravaged Soviet Republic. 20 of the subsequent years have been taken up with wars and economic recovery, the wars which were perpetrated by even U.S. imperialism in the beginning, even using Hitler as a buffer. The Civil War and intervention cost us a quarter of our national wealth, we who love the Soviet Union. The Second World War destroyed about a third of the entire national wealth. In 2 world wars and the Civil War, we lost almost 40 million of our most vigorous citizens, not counting those who died of wounds and shocks afterwards in our beloved USSR. These wars left the USA virtually untouched. During the Second World War, indeed, her industrial output increased by half. The Nazis had destroyed 1,710 towns, 70,000 cities and villages, and tens of thousands of factories, mines, power stations, and so on. Soviet output naturally fell in 1946. It was still only 3/4 of the pre-war level. But by 1950, the Soviet Union had again reached and passed the pre-war economic level by a miraculous advent. We then stood at about 30% of the American level. Growth rates of Soviet industry have long been far higher than USA. Admittedly, during the first 5-year plans, that was easy to achieve in view of our low starting level. But from 1950 to 77, our industrial production grew 11 times over, whereas America's only tripled. The average annual increase in the Soviet Union was 9.2%. In the USA, only 4%. In many Soviet industries, the growth in output is now higher than the USA's in actual as well as relative terms. Since the early 70s, the Soviet Union has been investing more than the United States of America. We are now ahead of the United States of America in output of oil, coal, iron ore, steel, cement, mineral fertilizer, and other important items. True, the USA still produces more commodities and offers more services than the USSR, and standards of prosperity are generally higher. But man does not live by bread alone. The level of the second of the social development is also measured by other yardsticks. I didn't give you a test on Saturday, but you might have one tonight or any night, so please don't take advantage. Don't turn off what you're hearing, the truth about the news. For instance, the Socialist Soviet Union has no unemployment at all and has not had any since 1930. It has no energy, ecological, or economic crises. It has no inflation crisis, and has been stable for more than 20 years. Social benefits like the health services, education grants, pensions, and allowances are all financed from the state budget. There are no deductions from wages. Imagine that. No Soviet citizen need fear losing his job. He need not fear failing by losing his job, by falling ill and being unable to afford treatment, of losing his savings because of inflation. And he pays next to nothing for fares on any vehicle, plane, or train, or bus, are little or nothing in rent. It's down now to 2% in many areas, and some places 1% of the entire salary. And actual material levels are rapidly rising. Since 1950, real incomes per head in the USSR have quadrupled, an average annual growth of 5.2% against America's 2%. Like many others of my generation, I have a vivid memory of my childhood, says this writer. During the war, my father was killed, so were the fathers of most of my classmates. I remember how the ink froze in our ink pots and the dry crust of rye bread was the most delicious food in the world. We wore jackets cut down from our father's old trench coats and dreadful boots for several years after the war. What a contrast today. Perhaps the biggest complaint nowadays is the shortage of books. Though we publish more than any other country in the world, they are still in short supply because the Soviet Union are literate all and they're avid readers. And we have fewer cars. Yes, we still have problems, but like most Soviet people, I am convinced that we shall overtake America in those fields where it still retains a lead.
Yeah,
in the very near future, too, socialism is only bound to win. Because eventually the worker will see that only under socialism does he get all the benefits of his labor.
Anytime that happens,
where else do you find the people paying no rent, paying no cinema, but not paying for the movie or for the dance, or not paying even for many restaurants, not paying for telephones or gas or utilities, not paying for transportation, being able to save all that money and have it in the bank? Where else? Obviously, it's going to soon become aware to all thinking mankind and womankind that it is in the Soviet Union that hope of the world lies. We have never had any hesitation about borrowing from the Americans anything that is actually good, business acumen, enterprise, the speed with which they introduce the latest technical developments in their advanced capitalist state. They've had 250 years over the Soviet Union, and we shall go on doing so. Because we are socialists, we learn wherever we can. And even though capitalism had a 250-year head start, we have practically caught up in every area, and in many areas are far in advance. But there are more than a few things that would be well advised to borrow from us, the socialist world. Thus ends that commentary in full agreement. Soviet people today observe Constitution Day. The new constitution was adopted by the parliament 1 year ago after a fourth month discussion in which all the adult population took part. Thousands of proposals and amendments were submitted to the Constitutional Commission headed by Leonid Brezhnev, head of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, the avant-garde of liberation in Africa and all over the world. They were taken into account when the final text was drafted. The new constitution became a summary of the Soviet state's development in 60 years. It has 174 articles protecting all the main points of the Helsinki Accords and the principles of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. The constitution guarantees Soviet citizens the rights to work, to free education, to paid leave, health protection, and pension. The Constitution also includes the people's right to free housing in most areas. The General Secretary of the Soviet Communist Party, President Leonid Brezhnev, has sent a message to the chairman of the MPLA, Party of Labor, and the president of Angola, Agostinho Neto, the Marxist-Leninist country of Angola, on the second anniversary of the bilateral treaty for friendship and cooperation. The message reflects international solidarity in the struggle against imperialism, colonialism, and racism, and a struggle for peace and international security. Leonid Brezhnev feels certain that continued friendship and close cooperation between the two nations will gain in strength and scale to the benefit of both nations and peace and progress, too. The president of Syria has returned to Damascus after completing an official visit to the Soviet Union. In a telegram to Leonid Brezhnev, he expressed satisfaction with the talks in Moscow and stressed they would further strengthen closer bilateral relations because of USA's Camp David sellout. At the talks with Leonid Brezhnev and other Soviet leaders, Special attention was paid to the situation in the Middle East. Communique on the results of the talks denounced the Camp David sellout agreement between Egypt and Israel as a collusion breached behind the backs of the Arabs. The Soviet Union and Syria feel that backstage separate deals serve only to heighten the explosive situation in the Middle East. In their opinion, lasting peace in that region should be based on the immediate withdrawal of the Israeli aggressive troops from the occupied territories and respect of the right of the Palestinian Arabs to have a state of their own. This can be reached within the framework of the Geneva Peace Conference. Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko, speaking of Soviet evolution and growth, has hit on a problem of strengthening peace, the Middle East, and on Soviet-American relations. The Soviet Union, said he, wants to have good relations with USA because peace between the two countries means peace for the whole earth. He spoke in favor of a speedy conclusion of the SALT agreements with the United States, and he noted that some changes in the right direction have taken place in the American stance. At least he's hopeful. At the wish of President Carter to meet Leonid Brezhnev, he said that this meeting should be well prepared for the signing of important documents, above all on limiting strategic weapons. Andrei Gromyko, foreign minister of the USSR, noted that the current session of the United Nations General Assembly, nearly all the member countries have backed the Soviet proposal to conclude an international convention guaranteeing the security of non-nuclear states. The United Nations Security Council has urged the conflicting sides in Lebanon to stop hostilities and observe the ceasefire. The call is contained in a resolution that was unanimously approved last night. The Council also requests the sides to let international Red Cross teams enter Beirut and evacuate one of the most beautiful capitals one time in the world. They've got to evacuate the wounded and the dead. They're laying all over the city. The Security Council called for the restoration of peace in Lebanon on the basis of unity, integrity, independence, and national sovereignty, and the removal of all troops of Israeli aggressors. A group of African countries at the United Nations have condemned the decision of the United States to issue an entry visa to the head of the racist regime of Rhodesia, Ian Smith. In a general statement published in New York, they described it as a moral violation of the United Nations Charter and of the Security Council's resolution for the observation of the Smith regime. They found it surprising and shocking that the United States had violated these resolutions after their so-called report of favoring human rights. The Patriotic Front of Zimbabwe views the United States' action as a challenge to the international community. They said that the United States hopes to arrange talks with Ian Smith about the future of Rhodesia and demands of the recent Camp David sellout arrangements. The Vice President of Vietnam, an ally of the Soviet Union, has completed his official visit to Angola. In a communique signed at the end of his visit, he denounced China's aggression against Vietnam and called for its stop by pursuing the expansionist policy. The communique said, China aligns with the imperialist powers. This policy is a threat to peace in Southeast Asia, Africa, and the whole world. The communique expresses full support for the national liberation movement in Southern Africa. It also denounced Israeli aggressors' actions in upsetting the unity of the Arab people and depriving the Arab people of Palestine to form their own state. The Vice President of Vietnam went on to stress that the Chinese had made great strides in the service of their own people and domestic collectives, and why could they not change their complete barbaric foreign policy before it's too late and ultimately a nuclear war comes. The World Peace Council's president has called the International Conference in support of the liberation movements in Southern Africa and against apartheid. The conference is sponsored by the World Peace Council, the Organization of Afro-Asian Solidarity, and the United Nations Special Committee Against Apartheid. Over 1,000 delegates from 80 countries came for mobilizing progressive forces everywhere to sign against the mass struggle against imperialism in Africa. The Human Rights Commission of the Organization of American States heard evidence from the citizens of Esteli in Nicaragua. They told the commission about the campaign of mass murder and terror launched in the city by dictator Somoza. National Guard, backed and armed by U.S. imperialists, along with the guidance of USA advisors right on the scene, they captured many of the... They were captured. U.S. advisors were captured in the city of Esteli. The city was practically demolished. According to the witnesses, the soldiers were shooting civilians and looting their homes, raping the women, killing innocent children. Today, the commission is visiting the city of Messiah, I believe it would be pronounced. In Moscow, the secretary of the Soviet Communist Party Central Committee has met with a delegation from the African National Congress of South Africa. The delegation thanked the Soviet Union for its support for the Patriotic Front of South Africa in their struggle against the racist regime. Soviet people abhor the system of apartheid and racism everywhere. And there are, 150 different races that live in peace inside the Soviet Union. And they insist on the liberation of the people of South Africa. Soviet farmers grew a good crop this year. A record amount of grain has been harvested. The farmers sell all their products to the Soviet government, the people, at a high guaranteed price. The capital income of the Soviet Union's rural area has doubled in the last 6 years. The Soviet cosmonauts have begun unloading the unmanned cargo ship Progress 4, which docked with the orbiting ship on Friday. The Soviet Union has demanded that the trial of two Soviet diplomats in the United States be stopped. Some time ago, two workers at the United Nations Secretariat were arrested in the United States and charged with conspiracy to damage U.S. security. The charges against the two Soviet diplomats are unfounded, as of course always they are. The Soviet officials have no relation to any conspiracy. The whole case is nothing but a provocation by the American Secret Service and CIA. It is obvious that the unjustified trial should be stopped immediately, and the two men given the opportunity to leave for their home, the beloved Soviet Union. The last commentary. Whom does the law protect? Police and fishery inspectors arrested a group of poachers near Astrakhan for illegal fishing of sturgeon and possession of sturgeon roe. In court, they were identified as G. Greshushkin, himself a volunteer fishery inspector, and three of his subordinates. The accused hoped that Greshushkin's position would get them out of trouble in the Soviet Union. But the court found them all guilty and gave them sentences of 18 months. Soviet courts often hear cases where there is a clash between the interests of the individual and those of state organizations or governments. In that event, both parties have to prove their cases. The Chapayevsky and Kuybyshev region, a state organization, demolished the home of one A. Penkov, P-E-N-K-O-V, without first providing him with alternative accommodations. The court found for the plaintiff. Cases like this are quite common, and they completely disprove the assertion often made in the West that Soviet law protects state organizations and officials rather than in the interest of the ordinary people. In other words, that man was given his full house back and all of the damages that had been done to him in terms of psychological and other pressures. Another assertion is that in communist countries, constitutions are just scraps of paper which are no guarantee for fundamental human rights. Lies like this find acceptance because in the capitalist world, people often know from their own experience how hard it is to win a legal battle against a government organization. In charging that the same thing applies in socialist countries, Western ideologists, liars, are misleading those who listen to them. The Soviet Constitution certainly says that citizens must not use their rights against the teaching of socialism, but that doesn't mean that the government claims that and actions are automatically deemed to be right. What with that particular article in the Constitution does is to protect the rights and freedoms of Soviet citizens by stopping individuals using them in ways that curtail the rights and freedoms of the vast majority. In a socialist state, any action really directed against the government is in fact directed against the whole people, because the people own everything, the means of production, the means of distribution, all the wealth. So the people are the government. All judicial bodies in the Soviet Union make it their business to see that the rights and freedoms of Soviet citizens are observed and ensured. The penal codes of the Soviet Union, USSR, and the constituent republics provide for stiff penalties for crimes against constitutional rights and liberties of the individual. It is, for instance, a criminal offense to do anything that would deprive women of equal rights or to violate the privacy of correspondence or the home. It is a criminal offense to discriminate towards anyone because of race, creed, or color. The law also provides for punishment of violations of the labor laws and for refusal to employ or for dismissal of a pregnant woman or nursing mother. It protects the rights of authors, separates church and state, and sees that believers can freely exercise their religion. And all these laws are scrupulously observed in the Soviet Union, the avant-garde of liberation the world over. An official who tries to flout labor laws, to ignore safety regulations, who fails to abide by collective agreements or tries to interfere with trade union activity will quickly find himself out of his job or facing the courts. At an engineering works in Kirov, K-I-R-O-V, region, an unskilled woman worker was injured. She was injured when a concrete slab fell from a faulty crane. The manager was charged with permitting the use of faulty equipment and also for employing a worker not qualified for that particular job. He got an 18-month sentence. Our penal codes all contain a section on crimes committed by officials. They are liable to punishment for abusing their power, overstepping the limits of their job, and for negligence which harms any individual or other people's interest. Presumptions of innocence is, by the way, a basic principle of Soviet law. Thus, for the propaganda that you've heard about where justice really exists, it is the USSR that really has justice and protects the individual. Be sure you look at the news and recite again, listen, be sure before tonight when we have the movie, the language class, be sure that you review the tape on guest. That's very important. You must review that one. And also, I urge that you look at the news on the boards. Secondarily, I say in your afternoon time or whatever time you have, dress your properties up very nicely. Keep them up very, very high standards, because the inspection committee will have to talk about it otherwise. We will not be having so many meetings, but we will have to continue with our language studies and our news. And please be sure you're listening to the news and not shutting it off, because you're responsible for the news as it proceeds. We have to know the news, remember the Constitution, and we also must be working at our highest level so that we expect to be done. For the next few hours, Comrade Lee Ingram and Comrade Al Cheddar will be working, Al Touche rather, will be working to maintain this community. Let's see if we can do some things to clear up. I'd like a draft by the engineer on the building. We now have a geriatric section in the dining room, so we could be thinking of a time when we can replace it, our gravel down the front, all the mud stands. Maybe while we're gone, members of the real bulk working force, we could show that we have a esprit de corps that can continue things and push things ahead in spite of missing them as we will. It's very important now. Be sure. We have the news, as I said, will follow just after the movie. So there'll be treats tonight, special treats, and there will be a language class at 7:30. There will be some changes in that if we can, as soon as we get the analysis from the farm workers on exactly how much people can produce in their usual work day as compared to what they were producing. If they can show that they can produce the same amount, 2 hours less, then we will cut that out down to 2 hours, and gladly so. Remember the number of Guyanese neighbors that we have to help. We have tens of thousands of dollars expended for free medical care, taking them to our headquarters, giving them free medication, and the liberation of our own people who are in agony to be free, who cry to be free. When people have to go back, they go back in desperation. So please remember that, and let's remember all those that are suffering in the world, what our taxes in USA have done to the world, to kill, to destroy the innocents, little women and children that I was talking about a moment ago, Nicaragua. Why would U.S. President Carter and the Trilateral Commission and all the multinationals uphold him? They're going to lose even right-of-center governments. They've lost Venezuela over it. They're losing other South American governments on the South American continent because no one can approve of a dictator who murders his own people just to keep in power, to say that he's a dictator when he has no people left. He's murdered them all or forced them all into exile. Much love, and work well during this volunteer few hours that we have today. Thank you so much. Impressive, the most cruel, brutal, fascist tyranny in the world, and a government that remains propped in power by and admittedly 40,000 U.S. troops, and some say it's double that, and hundreds of nuclear bombs. The South is a living example of all that socialism in the North has overcome. And when the USA wasn't in South Korea and put up their dictatorship, Syngman Rhee, right after the War of Liberation, before the Soviets could free the South too, the North moved down with the South. The South rose up. And in a matter of, just a matter of hours, South and North had reunified. It took USA might, planes, and threat of nuclear missiles and bombs by Senator McCarthy, or General MacArthur, rather, to bring down the South Korean resistance. It is said by all pollsters that no dictatorship, including the present one, has had more than 1.5% of the support of the people. Sooner or later, South Korea's people will rise in rebellion against conditions there and demand the reunification of their country as Vietnam has done under socialism and the backing of the avant-garde Soviet Union. For 2,000 years, there was one Korea. Imagine USA wanting to divide a country that it was 2,000 years united. And 25 years of enforced artificial division will not change that fact. All the bayonets the U.S. Army can muster will never be able to sever Korea permanently. For progressives in the United States, the Korean situation presents a compelling demand. Of U.S. imperialism and its lackeys reaches directly into the lives of all Koreans. We here in Guyana, who do not sympathize with the way our tax dollars were being spent in the USA, have the opportunity and the duty to help remove it. If we work and produce, we can send out funds to help other systems. We also already have helped the DPRK while we've been here. But we've got to do more. We've got to get our people to freedom. I would think you'd take joy in just working to make funds for Zimbabwe and Patriotic Front, or the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, or Namibia. I would think that would turn you on. But some it doesn't. So observers will. Yes, because of the threat of revolution, the United States knows it's necessary to maintain its huge fascist arm in the South. The hands of imperialism reaches directly into the lives of all Koreans. We here have the opportunity, and as I said before, the duty, to help remove it. Who in the world is better situated to take up this fight than we, the only socialist movement, as the different guests have said in the last few days, in the United States? If we don't take it up, who will? We must always work. We know the night's coming when no man can work. We know nuclear war looks inevitable. We know it looks like almost an absolute. But as we commemorate this 25th anniversary of socialism really being free in the DPRK, we join with progressives the world over in demanding U.S. imperialism out of Korea, bring the troops home like Carter promised, even though he hasn't kept one of his campaign promises. Not one. Jobs he promised for blacks. All kinds of ecology things. They're all types of things. I can go on longer than's necessary. It's been a half hour of news. I want to give you less news so you can digest what you have for testing tonight in People's Rally. Thank you for your consideration and time, and I do love you more, as I say, than you'll ever know. Good morning. Good evening. Good day. Soviet Union's determination to struggle to eliminate this dangerous military hotbed in the Middle East. Speaking at the Kremlin with the president of Syria, close ally of the USSR, the vanguard of liberation, he said this is an ironic part of the Soviet Union's general struggle to stop the arms race, to promote the relaxation of tensions, and to spread it to all parts of the world. Leonid Brezhnev stated that at the start of the Middle East settlement, the Geneva Peace Conference, where it belongs legally, which the Soviet Union is co-chairman with the United States. The settlement must provide for the immediate withdrawal from all Nazi-occupied lands by Zionism, providing the Arab people of Palestine an opportunity to create their own state, therefore bringing them international garrisons of security for all states in the area. The Soviet Union had spoken out very strongly on behalf of these separate talks and individual freedom being guaranteed for the Near East and Africa. Secretary General of the United Nations, Kurt Waldheim, and the Chairman of the Security Council have voiced concern over the situation in Lebanon. In a joint statement issued after consultation with the Council members, they urged the sides involved in the conflict to stop hostility. Secretary Council, they continue consultation on the Lebanese issue. Meanwhile, there was more fighting in Beirut. Last night, shooting of artillery and missiles were used by Zionists in the clashes. Many buildings in the capital have been demolished in 1 week. More than 1,000 people have been killed or wounded in the last 4 days. The fighting was provoked by the Christian right-wing fascist, are what they commonly call themselves, phalangists, who oppose the presence of the inter-Arab peacekeeping forces in the country, which are the majority indeed. And U.S., of course, backs the phalangists, the fascists, that Israel has put in charge of southern Lebanon after attacking them aggressively, taking over their land with U.S. military hardware. At the current session of the United Nations Assembly in New York, the representatives of Vietnam and Madagascar has supported the Soviet proposal for concluding an international convention on the strengthening of guarantees of the security of non-nuclear states. Speaking at a full-scale session on Wednesday, the foreign minister of Vietnam called for a ban on the manufacture of all new types of weapons of mass destruction. The Madagascar minister fortified the new Soviet initiative for curbing the arms race as a notable contribution to the strengthening of international security. If you look on your map, Madagascar is the large island just to the east of the great continent of Africa. We're glad that Madagascar has joined so firmly in the Soviet Warsaw Treaty. Madagascar minister fortified his loyalty in every way possible to the Soviet Union. The Turkish representatives characterized disarmament as one of the primary tasks of mankind. This point of view is shared by most of the UN members, because all scientists say that there'll be a nuclear war within a matter of just a few years at the maximum. The text was stated by Kurt Waldheim in a report on the implementation on the Declaration of the Strengthening of International Security. United Nations circles denounced the decision of the United States Department to issue, State Department to issue visas to the leader of the racist Rhodesian regime. Three African conciliatories who have concluded with him, they called it a violation of sanctions against Rhodesia and insist that Washington has given its full support for the Smith regime. And they say that they should go ahead and receive the fascist because they're paying his way with our tax dollars, which have now risen to $1 billion, plus billions of dollars that have gone into corporation from things we've bought. All the corporations and the supermarkets and so forth. The Rhodesian or Zimbabwean authorities have decided to expand the state of emergency zone to include more regions. The decision follows an intensification of combat operations by the Zimbabwean Patriotic Front under the brave leadership of Robert Mugabe, Marxist-Leninist, and Joshua Nkomo Nationalist, an organization engaged in armed struggle against the racist and fascist regime. The latest reports from Salisbury say that emergency measures already operate in about one-fifth of Rhodesia territory. They were introduced late last month. Smith's troops have been given the authority to burn down whole villages and shoot civilians on charges of assisting the guerrillas. That's what we're doing with our U.S. aid, our mercenaries that have been trained, Air Force officers from New Mexico. That's what we're doing. Burning down whole villages. He said it on Radio Salisbury. No kidding. He will burn down whole villages and shoot every civilian in them. Joshua Nkomo of the Zimbabwe Patriotic Front has reaffirmed opposition to a proposed all-party conference on Rhodesia. He said the proposal is not even worth considering because the latest actions by Ian Smith, fascist white imperialist, have killed the whole idea. Joshua Nkomo said he has no further information about supporters of the front who were arrested by the Rhodesian authorities over the past few days. The political school of the Ethiopian Bureau of Mass Organization Affairs has circulated some 230,000 books and teaching aids on Marxism and Leninism in the beautiful new free Ethiopia. The Ethiopian Herald said the Marxist-Leninist literature is in growing demand in that country. Orders for it come from all over the population, every sector, public offices, schools, associations of parliament, private citizens, and everyone else. The Human Rights Commission of the Organization of American States has gone into session in Managua, the capital of Nicaragua, that's almost been bombed in the Stone Age by our tax dollars by sending American jets to that fascist madman Somoza that was put in power by the U.S. Marines when the U.S. Marines invaded. They are investigating mass suppressions in Nicaragua. Somoza's regime has now killed close to 40,000 innocent persons. 25,000 people have fled the country to escape reprisals. Troops have destroyed and burned whole towns, killing everyone in sight. Members of the commission have begun to hear witnesses representing all the factions of the population, political and church circles. Leaders of the fascist regime of Chile and the Chinese foreign policy sellout leaders plan reciprocal talks and visits, trade that is. Chile's foreign minister is to go to Peking, mainland China, in a few days. It is reported that Peking's minister received a letter from Pinochet inviting him to Chile. According to the minister, Pinochet may make a trip to China in the near future. Undoubtedly, China's doctrine of three worlds, which we must always remind ourselves of, is indeed being applied to some degree. And she is indeed not in the pocket of the USA, because she supported Mozambique and Zambia and Tanzania. And she no doubt thinks that she's gaining by moving into areas like even Chile. It would not be the first right-wing regime that's been known to move away from that posture when it was convenient. It almost happened with the Philippines when Mrs. Marcos attempted to become an ally of the Soviet Union, but it was squelched. Thus, so I sent Chilean's foreign ministers to go to Peking in a few days. It is reported that Peking's minister received a letter from Pinochet inviting him to Chile. According to the minister, Pinochet may make a trip to China in the near future. The crew of the Salut space station are getting ready to receive the cargo ship launched on Wednesday. There's much nervousness and apprehensiveness in the USA as to what the spacecraft really does contain. Perhaps it's laser beam that can destroy any missile they try to fire. That would mean no one would be killed in Russia and everyone in USA would die. Or maybe not. If it's something that hones in to heat, they might be able to stop the missile before it got out of the silo and thus save some several thousands of lives in the USA. As the ship is approaching the station, the cosmonauts are picking up its control and orientation. It is to deliver over 2 tons of fuel, scientific equipment, material, water, air, and food. This is the fourth transport operation carried out this year by the Soviet Union, the avant-garde of liberation. Each operation makes it possible to prolong research in orbit. The cosmonauts on the Salut craft have set a record in space orbit of 113 days. Thus ends the reading and commentary, most of it commentary of the news. We hope that you will work hard and have a love for your people, our responsibility. There's some of you that still feel pressured by time. You need to put yourself out of the way more and put the suffering babies before your faces more realistically. And some of the good people back there in USA that just beg to come. And Gene Brown, who can't stand the thought of leaving in June, who began to swell in her body when she had to go back, June Krim. You need to be more thoughtful of these matters, and I think you'd find our schedule not quite so demanding upon you. In someplace else, when we've reached our paradise, you will not have to have that kind of structure. The hours are less, things will be already provided for us, so it would be a much better situation. So keep your peace and keep your expectations high. I don't know why anyone would be downhearted in these days, because the most encouraging news has come our way. I guess you know, a good article was carried in the Progress on our behalf, Sarah Berkeley paper, the Barb, USFO, UFSO, UKPU, KCBS, and Channel 7 Eastern Show. Very good. Marston was on with Dr. Lane and Dr. Freed, and perhaps Dr. Good and other representatives, and the television show with a man by the name of Davis on KGO Channel 7. That's where everybody really reads the news, so that way you can get a real insight as to what is happening. We're fortunate. That'll give our people a little bit more encouragement, but they're living under a heavy weight, so we will tolerate no work indifference, and there will be observers this time planted, and we will see who cares. Much love.